Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Ron Layton, Deputy Chief Information Officer at the U.S. Secret Service. Also joining us from IBM is Melinda Balthrop. So, Ron, the cybersecurity workforce encompasses a variety of context roles, occupations that seem so broad and diverse that they can't be treated as a single profession. To that end, is cybersecurity ready to be professionalized across the nation? And more particularly, what jobs within the cybersecurity field should be professionalized?
So, by way of historical context, in the year 300 BC, civil engineering emerges as a discipline. From there, military engineering. From there, mechanical engineering. Fast forward to 1802 at the United States Military Academy at West Point. That's the first American engineering school. Jump up to 1950, the emergence of something called computer engineering. I give you that by way of historical context to suggest cyber's only 60 years old. It's new. So many of the things that cyber is going through in regard to the professionalization question, these are all things that all of the other disciplines have gone through. The National Research Council, in association with the National Academy of Science, last year released a report on the nation's professionalization of the cybersecurity workforce. And what it says is that just like you stated initially in the question, it is incredibly diverse, and that the country needs to pay more attention to what professionalization means. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we start off with a definition, the committee who did the report that was out of George Washington University suggested that professionalization was a standard that was worked to by folks within a community of interest. And they talked about things like, should it be licensed? They talked about things like unstable definitions. And they talked about the diversity of the profession. So it's not at this point that it should or should not be professionalized. Much, much more attention needs to be paid to the diversity of the field. And one notable exception came out of the study. That exception was for law enforcement and digital forensics. And so the field of digital forensics is professionalized. It comes with various licenses and certifications, primarily because that evidence needs to be taken into a court of law. And those are the drivers for the field of forensics to be professionalized.
Regarding the migration of digital natives into law enforcement, would you elaborate on the impact or consequences of this shift in culture?
Sure. So digital natives are people who kind of grew up with the technology. And so when those folks come into a law enforcement organization, they already show up technologically savvy. I don't want to date myself, but I do have more than 20 years in the Secret Service. And when I got out of the academy, I got a Polaroid camera. See, nobody even knows what a Polaroid is anymore. I got a revolver. I got a measuring device, which was like a little stencil, that type of thing. I mean, that's crazy in today's environment. So now folks get laptops and they get BlackBerries and smart computing devices, all of this kind of stuff. But the thing is, folks show up with a technological sophistication that they bring to the job. We don't necessarily have to teach them. So those people show up and they're the same folks that go to places like Best Buy and for $100 they buy a smart device that is highly capable. And you download apps and all these other kinds of things. And what ends up happening is they end up asking the question, why can't I do this on my work device? Mm-hmm. And a couple of things. Those apps, people don't realize, you know, I have to go back to my undergraduate education. When I was taking and learning how to code in languages like machine language and Fortran. You know, you might have written a computer program that was, you know, several hundred lines of code, and you thought that was a big deal. The code today has almost, you know, 750,000 lines of code. Many applications have more than a million lines of code. So do you think that that application or that program might have an area where it's vulnerable? Of course. It's a huge thing. But the thing is, the user doesn't usually care about that kind of thing. So the digital natives just want to show up and want to be off to the races in terms of their devices. So the digital immigrants are still not quite sure. They still have a tendency to write things down. The digital immigrants live in an era where they watch their parents leave the house and go to, you know, maybe go to where you pay your bill at, to the phone company, and write a check out or give cash. I mean, nobody does that anymore. But that's the era that they're coming from. And so we are seeing a clash of these two cultures, and it is different, and leadership needs to recognize that these people show up already with a technological skill set intact.
So, Ram, would you elaborate on your efforts to enhance IT governance within the Secret Service? How does governance enable you to optimize resources across the agency?
In a mission-centric organization, it really is a delicate balance between governance and mission. And when there's an operation that needs to occur, or we need a vital piece of equipment, or we need a capability, we are not typically going to stand in the way because of a governance issue. It really is mission first, but it is an absolute balance, and it's always a balance between the resources that are available and what we can actually accomplish with those resources.
What are you doing in the area of IT program reviews within the agency?
So, Clinger-Cohen is a 1996 act that governs the behavior of CIOs. And generally, it is voluminous, but some of the key points is that it grants authority to the CIO to advise the director of an agency regarding matters of IT governance and IT matters. One of the things within that environment is program reviews. The idea of a program review is really, I look at it as it's an opportunity for coaching. And there are three things that we generally going to look at for program reviews: cost, schedule, and performance. And we do sessions with our program managers regarding these things prior to the formal program review, so we can identify gaps in what is it that they need. So the idea of the CIO is not to hammer you and say you can't do this or you can't do that. The idea is to identify these gaps and say, what is it that you need to be successful? So that's kind of the approach that we take towards program reviews or PMRs.
Ron, how serious capability is analytics to your efforts and the success of your mission? And what are you doing to strengthen this core capability?
We as an agency, everyone, it's all about analytics. You hear this new term called big data. And, you know, it's not the data, it's the analysis of the data. So in 2008, our electronic crimes special agent cadre examined and seized approximately 800 terabytes of information. So now I know you're already thinking about that movie, right? So that's times 800. And that was in 2008. Today, those same agents examine on an yearly basis, 1.2 petabytes of information. All right, so now we have a new word, petabyte. So once again, this little narrative here, I'm going to ask you, Melinda, what's your favorite song?
Stevie Wonder's Ribbon in the Sky.
Okay. So when you think of a petabyte, you should go out and buy yourself some freeze-dried pizzas, because you could listen to that song, Ribbon in the Sky, continuously for 2,000 years. Mm. And that's how large a petabyte is. So The agents are looking again at an accumulative or an aggregate of 1.2 petabytes. And if you just look at how this is expanding, we need an analytic capability to be able, again, to not offer our adversaries digital sanctuary and to be able to use computing systems and effective programming to successfully analyze that massive volume of data. And, you know, if there is something, you talk about what are we doing to strengthen our capability? Well, we're staying current with the technology. The other thing that we're doing is that we have a recognition that, you know, there's not one agency that that can do everything, but we can leverage our partnerships, whether it's other governmental organizations or the private sector, for deficits that we may have.
Given the agency's critical mission, which requires technical skills, expertise, and diverse competencies, what are you doing to ensure you have a well-trained and technical workforce to meet your mission challenges?
Well, you know, there is I think every agency is looking for good people. And so some of our conversation has talked about leadership, and I believe that you can't get anything done if you don't have a good set of people. What I've found is that people who are technology professionals are also, they're kind of digital tinkerers. They want to go out and see what the next best thing is. So this is a workforce that already wants to go out and learn new things. So we do what we can to avail them of those opportunities, whether it's organic or whether it's an external training opportunity. This is a group of people who just really want to go out and be on the cutting edge of whatever the next thing is. And one thing that I do want to say about that cutting edge is that there's always a question, can an agency stay on the cutting edge of technology? And the answer is kinda. And the reason that it's not for sure is that the federal acquisition cycle, it takes 3 years to get money. Now, if you remember back when we were talking about Moore's Law, technology really does turn over about every 18 months or so. So the fact is that you can never really quite catch up. But from a threat perspective, you probably don't want to. And that's simply because the latest version 5 or version 6 or whatever, even with some of the big companies, what do you notice 2 weeks later? There's a fix for it. And there has to be a fix because there was a vulnerability. So it probably is better from a tactical and strategic standpoint to just kind of be a little behind and not expose the enterprise to the vulnerabilities that are surely resident in new releases.
What emerging technologies offer the most promise for combating cyber threats? We will ask Ron Layton, Deputy Chief Information Officer at the U.S. Secret Service, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.